Ladies and gentlemen, it is the Sports Meets Beer podcast. We are back for the first time in a long time.
Together.
We've had a couple of episodes come out where we've been with other folks, but we are reunited and it feels so good. My name is Brad Barmore. I am joined by my illustrious co-host.
6 feet away.
6.3 feet away.
Yeah, we went a little extra on that just to be safe.
Because we could stand technically 6 feet away, but the circumference of our bellies, we really have to go 6 feet from belly button to belly button.
That's like an 8 foot. I mean, that's pretty big.
Well, no, 6 feet from belly button to belly button is 6 feet. But
yeah, but 8 feet, that's 8 feet face to face.
Yeah, well, my belly like makes me hunch over. So it's really 6 feet from toe to toe. or no, 8 feet from toe to toe, I should say. Check us out on all the social medias, guys. Go toe to toe with us on Twitter. We'd love it.
Oh, man. So here's something I got for you. I've been hit up multiple times on Twitter. I don't even remember the Ruizing brackets.
Of course.
Right? The fast food bracket and all the cereal bracket and all that stuff. Should I do a what to do during the COVID-19 bracket? Because I've been asking to do people have been asking for dedication brackets for a while, ever since he passed. Shortly after he passed. And I don't know, I thought thinking about like, well, the best way to spend your time.
Well, like, okay, so when you say dedication brackets, like, what are we talking about? Like drinking Jim Beam?
Oh, it would be, it would include all of the classic Ruizing tales, like get Rutt's Hut to go versus, you know, doing a Taylor Ham to go.
Oh, Taylor Ham.
Right? So like shit like that. So just something dedicated to him, but in the fashion of what to do during this time. The problem is that I have to literally take a full day or two off of work to manage all of those.
Are you Ruizing or not?
Yeah.
Take the 2 days off of work.
No, the reason would be actually do it while I'm working and collecting a paycheck.
Good point. Good point. In a bathrobe, no less. Well, as I said, social medias, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. You can email the show. It's at Sports Meets Beer, M-E-A-T-S, like the protein, Sports Meets Beer. We are on all the socials. It's sportsmeetsbeer@gmail.com. That's the email address. And yeah, if you are looking for other content to listen to, although there has not been much because the sports world has come to a grinding halt. You can also check me out on Outside Slants podcast with Danny Wright or the Stay Golden podcast with comedian Steve Osborne, which the most recent episode we did, we compared each Girl Scout cookie to what current Warrior player each Girl Scout cookie is. That's how far we've gotten into this malaise of no sports.
Wow. That's a deep dive.
It's a deep dive. But today, we are talking neither sports nor beer.
But meat.
But perhaps meats?
Yeah. There's definitely meat involved.
Oh, if you have not been watching Tiger King, what the fuck have you been doing?
You must be really good at knitting or have a plentiful bounty of puzzles to complete.
Your Sudoku game is tight. That's what that means.
Oh, yeah. You're definitely doing hard without checks of the puzzle.
Yeah.
Because I'm medium and I check twice. That's my new go-to for Sudoku.
Yeah, perfect. Perfect. Real quick, if you hear a bit of an echo in the background, it is because Ben and I are in the Publican in Windsor, which is closed because of this COVID-19 business, and we are currently sitting far apart. And as in an empty restaurant, the echoes sound lonelier than normal.
It's pretty bad.
I worry about them because who are they giving terrible news to?
Horrible hot takes.
Who are they making uncomfortable in their own house by staring at them when they're sitting in their seat?
Well, I'm sure their spouses and loved ones are very uncomfortable that they're now there every day.
Yeah.
The problem I think that you face is that you've got two things that could happen. A, they realize, man, look how much money I'm saving by not going to the pub, and they're not drinking as much, and they're getting healthier, and they feel better. Or they figure out, man, I could really do the same thing and talk to this mirror and do it with an 18-pack of Bud Heavies.
Yeah. Well, I'm not in the business of taking guests for granted. However, if a few people didn't come back after this, I wouldn't be super upset. Speaking of things that I wouldn't be super upset about, I would. You've already done. You're already done with the season. I wouldn't be super upset if I could sit down and watch the rest of the season of Tiger King right now, but my wife would lose her mind.
Well, that's something you got to share.
Yeah, that's what we're here for. We're here to discuss Tiger King. In the absence of sport, entertainment takes its place. I am not a big TV guy. It's taken me, what, 3 years to get through two seasons of Mindhunter, and I watched it when it first came out. You know, I'm sports or cooking. That's basically the
the two worlds.
Being dad, right? So I don't get a chance to watch a lot of this stuff. So the quarantine, I guess, in a lot of ways, has made me more cultured. Although the subject matter of Tiger King suggests that cultured is probably the wrong word.
Oh, you know, there's a culture happening, but it's not anything worth repeating.
If you have watched Tiger King, I'm only at episode 3 at the time of this recording. So I'm a little bit behind.
Well, if you haven't watched it, number one, this is going to be a spoiler episode.
Spoiler alert.
We are spoiling things.
Spoiler alert. So if you haven't watched.
I'm going to do my best, since I just wrapped it last night. I'm going to do my best to not spoil it for you. And if I do slip up and tell you more information than I realize, I apologize in
advance. No problem. It's no problem. I think that if I go into some of these episodes with an idea of what's going to happen, then... As I was telling you before the mics went on, my family has started, all my cousins and stuff, and I have, and my wife, we've started a text chain specifically to discuss Tiger King. And if I have an idea of what's going to happen going in, I can pay attention to some of the finer details, and my notes and commentary into what is a very cerebral group, my notes and commentary will be on point. So don't worry too much. I mean, I don't want you to, like, ruin it. But if you let slip a couple of things.
No. It's great because you just watched episode 3.
I did. And by the way, Carol Baskin, 1,000% murdered that dude.
So one of the best things I heard on Twitter is that Carol Baskin has the same inflection and delivery as Hillary Clinton. And once you hear that, you can't unhear it. She sounds identical.
All right, well. Let's compare that, actually. If her story is to be believed, she was raped at knife point, which is a tragic story, right?
Yes.
There's trauma in her life, and she's trying to maintain herself in a position of power. Let's look at Hillary Clinton. Her husband fucked a woman with a cigar. It's not quite the same level of trauma, but it's hardship in your life.
But it's but far more publicized.
Sure.
That's the part, is that she couldn't escape that.
No.
For anything.
She lost an election because they were unwilling to go to certain states that are normally blue because they didn't want to answer questions about emails or Bill Clinton. And so she lost a presidential election because of that. So, of course, she's still trying to maintain, you know, a level of leadership and maintain a level of power. So yeah, the inflection is right, and the eyes are kind of dead.
They're dead. And the other part too is that she kind of has, you feel like every answer is rehearsed. That yeah. Everything is just, it feels so scripty and sing-songy and kind of, I'm going to make everything laughable.
I will. Yeah, so just a real quick setup. So this is about a dude named Joe Exotic. He's in Oklahoma. He owns a private zoo that has 200 different big cats in it, right? And there's apparently, this is a big culture sort of in the flyover states and then certain parts of the South where big cats are owned all over the place. Who knew? He's got a private zoo.
I had no fucking idea.
Yeah, I had no idea. So he's got a private zoo, and there's like a rivalry between a lot of these big-time sort of big cat preservations. Yeah, preservations. So there's this dude. It's Doc.
Yeah.
Doc Addles or whatever it is.
Doc Creeper McFucking Creeperson.
So we'll go to him in a minute. And then there's also Carol Baskin, but Carol Baskin operates under the guise of being a big cat rescue center.
Yes.
As opposed to a place that's breeding cats. There's all this discussion about whether or not people posing with the, you know, the
petting and the touching of young cubs.
We're not here to
for a profit is the ultimate. That's the premise of this whole show.
I disagree.
Well, that's in theory what it's supposed to be.
Right, right. We're not going to discuss the morality of whether or not this kind of stuff should be allowed, because that's the least important part of this show.
No, it's also the least fun part of the show.
So we have Joe Exotic. We have Doc. We have, what's his name? Is it Jim Stark? Is that his name? Jim Stark is from Ohio. And he, in a lot of ways on this show, he's my spirit animal. Because, well, I take that back. He's a guy that I appreciate the most because he's the realest out of all of them.
Yes.
He apparently told Doc, listen, I don't want to learn how to raise cats. I know how to do that. I want to know how to control all these women like you do.
That was the best. The best part, he's hanging out with his monkey on his shoulder, and the monkey's picking fleas and shit off his back, and he's just like, how do you control all these women?
Oh, my God. My real spirit animal through episode three, though, has been Carol Baskin's ex-husband, Don, who has mysteriously, air quotes, disappeared. It's his handyman, and I cannot remember his name, and I'm not going to fact check it, but I relate to him because of his beer belly and the faded chili stains on his shirt throughout the entire interview process in episode three. I'm like, oh, this is my dude right here. He also seems like the most normal guy in episode three.
You have to wait because episode 4, 5, 6 introduces another character that has probably the worst haircut for his body type.
How is that possible?
Ever.
Oh, okay. The worst haircut for his, not for in his, the show.
Not in the show.
Okay.
No, Joe Exotic takes that cake.
Joe Exotic.
But the thing about it, like, the coolest part about Joe Exotic is that he doesn't give a fuck. He knows who he is.
He's dressed like a Guy Fieri cover band.
This is what happens when a train wreck butt fucks a dumpster fire. This is the unborn child.
The other good one was, this is the genie that pops up when you rub a 2-liter bottle of Mountain Dew.
So, no, his outfits are fucking crazy. And I will hand it to the cinematography of the producer of this documentary. Between the nub that got her arm taken off and the first husband, how they have them laid out and interviewed is fucking unbelievable. So the first husband.
Yeah.
Right? Shirtless. Sprawled out over a chair in like sweatpants he's been wearing for 4 days.
And who apparently is super pissed that in the middle of this whole filming session, he got dentures and they didn't use any of that footage. They only used the stuff where he's toothless and shirtless.
Where he's meth mouth.
Super meth mouth. Just drinking meth through a fire hose.
There is a point where one of the sheriff kind of makes fun of him and calls it, you know, this is what we call meth mouth.
Yes.
Unofficially, officially.
Yeah, that's coming up. I haven't seen that part quite yet. But let's...
There's your first spoiler.
I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that.
We'll keep a counter.
So, this Joe Exotic dude, is he... He somehow, through three episodes, is the most endearing... Well, of the three ringleaders, I should say, he, through three episodes, is somehow... The gay, mulleted, right-wing, magician, big cat, zoo owner.
Country music star.
Country. Actually, that's not true.
We're going to get to that.
That's not true. So, anyway, again, gay, magician, big cat-owning, zoo-owning, gun-toting, right-wing, Oklahoman. Somehow, he is the most endearing of the three sort of big cat group. Are the big cat ownership group.
The big three, if you will.
The big three. Is there,
the big paw.
Like, you look at that dude and it's a train wreck, right? You're like, oh, something. I'm sure growing up as like an eccentric sort of gay magician drama type with a big personality, I'm sure you had a hard time in high school. I'm positive of that. Right? And that's part of the reason why he shows up and is like, you know, he's Big Papa to all these dudes that are like down on their luck and desperate, right? He sort of shepherds them to some degree so he can be the popular kid. I'm sure there's some of that exists.
Oh, of course.
And yet, even with that, he feels as skeezy as he is, he's the most endearing because it's certainly not Carol Baskin, who 1,000% killed her husband, and it's not Doc, who is like the skeeziest. He's like Charles Manson without the schizophrenia. That's the only way to describe it. Like with the harem of women, he's so gross. That dude Doc is so gross.
So gross, and does an amazing job at, he's probably the best cult leader, because even Joe Exotic was cult-ish to a point, but he provided people with, you know, with
dumpster
people
meat.
who were broken with some sort of family. They felt like family. Yeah. Whereas Doc just simply controlled and really like made them feel like, yeah, if you want to join, if you want
to $100 a week.
Yeah. You want to, but think about where the fuck they're living. Out in California, we can tell you $100 a week ain't shit. But out in the fucking sticks of Oklahoma.
Well, is he in Oklahoma now? I think he's in Florida.
He's in Florida. But even like through that panhandle, like $100 a week.
It's nothing,
but it's nothing. You could also live on it, though.
But here's the thing. I don't know that that's true. He just creates a scenario where you're never going out anywhere anyway, so what's the difference?
Right.
You know, I was actually really impressed that usually people that go through that have like real trauma and real sort of like they're closed off and aloof and they don't want to talk about any of that. But the young lady that they interviewed in episode two that talks about how she got coerced into getting a boob job. And
yeah, she didn't say yes, but she also didn't say no.
Right. So there's a lot of that stuff, but she seems very sort of like aware and cognizant of what it was. And then she was also able to get out. Right.
Yes.
So I'm happy for her.
But she also, I felt like she was still enamored. She knew she had to get out, but I felt like she still had feelings for that
situation.
I think
for the cats specifically. The idea, the romance of being around the big cats, I think. Not the idea of being around that freaking guy. No way. No way. She was
the minute they showed his house with the couch that like all pushed together into one big square, I'm like,
how do you want me to lay here?
Yeah. Dude, I looked at that and I was like, oh, that's a sex couch for sure.
Oh, God. Well, like when he put his elbow too hard into like one of the pillows and it shattered, that was the thing that really grossed me out. It's literally something out of Austin Powers.
Oh, yeah.
The shagadelic bed on the airplane. That's what that thing looked like.
Did you catch what he was like when they first went to him and he was trying to bark orders and be like a producer? He's like, okay, I'm going to go to the front door. You're going to do this. And you're going to say this. And they're like, even the guys made a joke like, he's a better producer than you are.
Just for the record, I've been around when reality TV shows are being recorded, and that's not unique to him.
Yeah.
Where the guy, the main guy is direct. Hey, do you want me to get me pulling up in my truck?
Or my Corvette.
Yeah, right. Poor man's Ferrari. So he's the skeeziest of them all because he's clearly a predator.
Oh, yeah.
There's clearly a predatory thing there.
See, that's the thing is, I think that either Joe Exotic does such a good job covering up his predatory influences, but like Doc is just straight up like grabbing young women to work with big cats because it's a power play. Whereas Joe Exotic is like, hey, you're down on your luck. You've hit rock bottom. I've got a place where you can sleep and a place where you can eat.
Yeah.
Come off the street to work for me.
Yeah,
and that's the difference. I think it's, you know, it's. I don't think Joe Exotic is predatory in nature.
But there's an exploitation factor that's going on there also, right? But somehow, this is through episode three. So we're going to do this again next week. And by this time next week, I will have completed the series. So I will have different ideas. But again, he's shepherding in these sort of, you know, ultra desperate people down on their luck. He's created a let's talk about the broad or the broad. That's awesome. The dame. What year is it? So let's talk about the lady that had her arm ripped off and then showed up to work 7 days later because she was afraid of what was going to happen at the park.
Right.
So you don't like, I know people are like, man, it's crazy. How do you, but like people are fulfilled by their job, and he's clearly created a scenario where people are ultimately fulfilled. And I promise you, there's no hanky panky going on there.
No,
because neither one of those two people is attracted to the other one.
No.
And so she's an interesting barometer on what kind of environment is at that particular park. And when she has her arm ripped off, which we're going to get to that scene in a second, when she has her arm ripped off, we see one of the most sort of sane and controlled moments of the entire show, where Joe Exotic goes into the gift shop and tells the next tour, hey, this is something that just happened. I want to make sure everybody's safe. I got to look after my team. If you'd like a rain check, we'll be happy to do that. If you'd like to refund your money, we'll be happy to do that. Then you see him break down and go, I'm never going to financially recover from this. But you see him in like a weird moment of sort of like clear sanity.
Yeah.
Where he's trying to be as...
It's controlled chaos.
Yeah, he's trying to be sort of as endearing as possible. Right? I mean, I give him some credit for that. But let's talk about this dude and how committed to the drip he is. The first move he makes after she gets her arm ripped off is to put on an EMT jacket.
I was going with that. Who the fuck has that in their arsenal of, like, the just-in-case break glass? What the shit is that?
What do you mean? She got what?
Hold on. The best part was, too, as they're fucking holding the wound, and he looks at her and he goes, are you okay? He asks her that in his paramedic jacket. It's the first thing you don't ask when you're a paramedic is, are you okay?
Right.
Your arm is fucking dangling by its veins.
Oh, dude, and they show enough where you could, like, see the skin just sort of, like,
oh, yeah,
flopping on the ground, which, you know, I appreciated. It made it feel real.
Oh, God. Just made me think of another scene that you're going to see in a little bit. Oh, my God. You're going to love it.
I can't wait. I cannot wait. So I actually think, that person in all of this is like the person that you look to that's like the beacon of sanity in all of this. Because she was giving like very sort of thoughtful answers.
Right.
And
she also knew that she made a mistake. It's not the mistake of the cats. It was her mistake, and she was prepared to continue going because for the love of caring for those animals.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is also when you have 200 large cats, everyone feels like they have their own litter or flock or whatever you want to refer to it as.
Sure.
I think that's part of that empowerment is that because he has so many cats there, all of those people feel like they feel like they have ownership of a small group and those cats are theirs and how they behave and act and look is a reflection of them. Now, the other guy that's my spirit animal, who you will find in episode 7.
I can't wait.
But he's in episode 1, is the head trainer for Joe Exotic's place.
Oh, yeah.
That guy, his fucking camera time is gold. Episode 7 gets even better.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait. I cannot wait.
It's good.
I know we're jumping around all over the place here. There's
Of course. There's no notes, no structure to this.
Let's talk about, I don't even remember his last name, but was it Don Baskin? Is that his name? So let's talk about Don Baskin's ex-wife and daughters. Think back to the interview process. The ex-wife is horrifying. Just terrifying. She doesn't blink at any moment.
No.
In any of the interviews. Her face is completely stone.
It's totally stoic.
Just giving like, there's seething rage in her voice, but it's just simmering like a nice beurre blanc. Just, just simmering just softly enough where you know it's there, but it's not overpowering anything in the room. And then the weird, like the one giraffe neck daughter and then the other pasty, perhaps inbred daughter that's over
there. The one daughter that looks like Joey Ramone.
Yes, exactly. Just going on like, and they're like, well, you know, we don't know, but if you're asking, I mean, the daughter's trying to sort of tiptoe around it, and the ex-wife's like, she killed him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She definitely killed him. She's a devil. She's an angel from hell. That's what she said.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just, oh, God, she's horrifying. Horrifying. And like, no wonder, I mean, you know me, I'm not like, I'm very pro-marriage, but no wonder he was fucking around. Like, she's terrifying. Terrifying. Jesus. Oh, there's air horns going on outside.
That's a good sign.
Yeah. You're locked down harder, guys. That watching the ex-wife and the daughters, that was like a super sort of like startling moment so far, at least in this series, because it speaks to like what small town America is sort of like. Like it's, pardon the pun, it's catty and it's gossipy, but they're also like, you know, Christian, and so they don't want to say anything. Like they're not going to say fuck that bitch.
No,
but they're also like, she's an angel from hell. Sent here by Satan.
Yeah, bless your heart is what they basically said, right?
Right.
So
it's Ozark in real life. That's what it is. Oh, yeah.
But it's one of those things like you could tell the minute that that producer went there and said, hey, I'm doing this documentary, they didn't even finish their sentence and they went, yes, I want to talk about it. Like they've been ready and poised for that interview their entire life. They already had those outfits picked out. They had everything set up ready to go because they knew it was coming. Because that's how evil that situation was and how shitty it was. Yeah. Those people that sit on those little, they harbor that hate and anger for so many years and they're so miserable. It's crazy.
And that's
so crazy.
That has nothing to do with the actual relationship because, like, you can see in the ex-wife's eyes to some degree, and then also, like, sort of hearing her voice that, like, there's an anger and like an edge towards the husband, and it's deeper than just he left. There's other stuff going on there. You can feel it. It's palpable through the television. There's that. And then, of course, it becomes this sort of, you know, Baskin becomes this lightning rod for that, right? She's the reason this all went on. We're going to move that anger from our day-to-day nitpicking arguments, all that stuff. Now she's the one that ruined us. Now I hate her. And then we made less than 10% of his fortune. Now, shut it down. Now we are super angry. I don't care what you say about where they're coming from, anybody else. The second they start talking about the estate and them getting 10% or less, that's when the anger and the claws come out.
Oh,
you could just see the shift there. So you can't tell me that this is about my father was a good man. No, he wasn't. He was an adulterer and a philanderer. And he was apparently, if any of Carol Baskin's journal entries are to be believed, he was a friggin' pervert and like a narcissist and borderline abusive.
I totally identify with this guy.
And so it's like, what do we really do? This is about the money. If you had gotten the money, you wouldn't have done this thing at all.
Right.
You wouldn't have jumped on this at all. Right? Let's go back to the Baskin thing real quick. When they ask her, so this show reminds me a lot of the podcast Serial. Did you ever listen to Serial?
Never did.
So Serial's awesome. The first season that they did was spectacular. Second season was good. The first season talked about this dude from Baltimore that, I think it was Baltimore, that, you know, there was a murder and they try to pin this dude down, but there's a lot of question marks about the case and the defense lawyer doesn't, kind of phones it in and doesn't do a job and he's in jail. It does this great job of sort of looking at all angles of the case. And so by the end of it, you're like, I don't know if he did it or not.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
I just don't know.
I have no idea. But like there are certain episodes where you're like, oh yeah, he totally did it. And others are like, nah, maybe he didn't. So this reminds me a lot of that because like they've painted this picture in episode 3 where it's like, oh yeah, she 1,000% did that, right? And what they did was, I can't wait to see how it goes moving forward. But what they did was I don't want to say they like manipulated some of Carol's answers, but they definitely cut them and put them into the episode in a way that makes it sound like she's being real specific about her answers.
Yes.
Like nobody said, like they don't make it seem like they said, well, what about the rumor that you fed him to the tigers? Like they don't let you hear that part. Like they give an answer and then she just kind of goes into that.
Right.
And you're like, man, you're being awfully specific about this.
Yeah. The rumor is they said I had fed him to the tigers. Like she leads the question.
Yeah,
she
exactly.
She leads the whole thing. And
that's
it's
the
like,
way they make it feel anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
And that way, they absolutely, this is like pro wrestling has written the best, an award-winning script, because you don't hear the questions being asked. You don't hear any of that. It's getting chopped up in editing. But my God, do they paint a bad picture for her.
But I feel like they're going to, I mean, again, you've seen it. I feel like they're going to do that with all these characters. They're not going to let Doc off the hook, are they? You could say yes or no.
No. Well, yeah. I mean, actually, he in the whole grand scheme of things, he's a minor character.
Yeah, because this story is really about Baskin and Exotic, right?
Right.
But just, he's the skeeziest out of all of them.
Yes.
If there's anything, that's going to be the follow-up. And he's not going to let him in because he's going to read what the public is saying and everything else. He creeps me out.
But you know what, though? He's one thing that they all have in common between Joe Exotic and Doc and Carol is that they all want the limelight.
That's true.
All for different reasons.
Apparently, Homeboy's super pumped from prison about his newfound fame.
Dude, this is everything he's wanted.
I know.
This is everything he's wanted. Tell me, if he was not out right now, how much millions he would make just on Cameo of him saying happy birthday to somebody on Cameo?
Have you seen any of the interviews that David Spade has done with some of the ancillary characters on this show?
No.
If you haven't, you should check it out on social media. They're great because you know that David Spade has this super biting sarcasm to everything that he does, and yet he comes across in these interviews as genuinely just asking them questions. And he has said, I'm not trying to make fun of these people. We want to know more about what this is really about.
Yeah.
So I'm letting them, I mean, the answers they give are entertaining, right? So I don't have to do
a
lot.
They are entertaining themselves. I mean, each one of those characters has, and before we take a break, I'm going to drop this one. I sent it to you in a text earlier today. How have we not addressed the similarities between husband number two to Joe Exotic and our friend of the show, Nick Catelli?
Let's take a quick break because we got PPs to make and we got sponsors to talk about. But we're going to talk about this because there's already been discussion about Halloween. So,
well, I've wanted to text him several times about just general tiger jokes and tomfoolery.
Oh,
and I haven't done it.
He's fully on board. I can promise you that. I think there's already discussion. And also, there were a lot of jokes made about the uniform and how much one Eli Bob looks like he would fit right in the wedding party for those three guys.
Oh.
Just bedazzled jeans with a pink shirt, extra starch on the collar, and shit kicker boots on.
That was... Easily, Eli Bob.
He's an usher in that one. Are you kidding? All right, let's take a quick break. We'll hear from a sponsor. And Ben and I go pee-pee. We'll replenish the beer bucket. And we'll talk a little bit more about Joe Exotic and the Tiger King, baby. Woo! Today's episode is brought to you by the support of Furno Grills. What's up, everybody? I am podcast host and restaurateur Brad Barmore. I have had the opportunity to cook on a lot of things, guys. Kettle grills, offset smokers, pellet grills, open pits, reverse flows, gravity smokers, cabinets, ugly drums. My Furno is hands down the best grill I have ever cooked on. You know, with gas grills, most folks get caught up in the BTUs, but it's really how well you can control and hold the heat that matters. And Furno grills happen to be a revolution in gas grilling and the ultimate cooking machine for the backyard cook, as they are designed and engineered with firewheel technology for the ultimate in precision heat control. Furno is the only gas grill with height adjustable burners, custom cast iron grates, and a fully insulated hood so you can sear without burning or cook slow and low to perfection. I've done steaks, burgers, chops, veggies, oysters, salmon, briskets, chicken, pork butts, tri-tips. Yeah, I cooked them all in the Furno, and it has impressed me every time. Plus, it looks modern and really sleek in the backyard. It is unlike any grill I've seen out there. Project Smoke, Steve Reichlin, Forbes Magazine, AspiringGentleman.com are all raving about what the Furno grills are doing to change the grilling game. Check them out on Instagram at Furno Grills, or for even more information, including recipes and financing options, head to www.furnogrills.com. All right. We're back from the break. Very excited. I have less pee in me. I have room for more beers. And we're discussing the old Tiger King. Let's talk a little bit about the husband situation.
Yes.
Now, this is not, before we get into it, this is not in any way a commentary, a statement of our beliefs, or anything like that about anybody who's getting married, whatever. I'm for all of it. But let's just discuss how strange it is that they were allowed to have three people get married at once.
See, I didn't know Oklahoma was a polygamy state. I had no idea.
Is that what it is? Or is it just that it's like not a, it's not legal?
I think it was probably not legal. Is the answer? I mean, I think that's. I can't see how it would be.
Well, I do know that if I were, I mean, I've had moments in my life where I'm like, "What am I doing?" Like, let's just figure. Like when I moved back east, for example, I was at a time in my life. You know, I had my. I guess it's not even really comparable because I had my now wife. We were engaged and she's awesome. We were trying to figure everything out, right? Like what we're going to do with our lives. So I don't know if I was like desperate or wandering or whatever, but if somebody had come to me and said, "How straight are you?" My answer wouldn't be pretty straight. My answer would be completely straight. And then if he gave me the question that Joe Exotic gave him, which is basically the Ron White question, right? Do you like soft, flaccid penises or do you like
the big, hard ones?
Yeah. If he gave me that question, I'd be like, I'm not even paying attention to that. You know, but this guy was like, "Oh, I like the big, hard ones." Well, I guess you're not that straight, are you? That worked. That worked. It's just very like,
it's very juvenile in the answer, and you're like, "Well, shit, I guess I am."
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, the guy's obviously very simple, right? And I know there's some chicanery that goes on later in the season because I know he's dead now. So
yes,
there's a whole bevy of topics we could take on in this regard. Discussing whether or not being a homosexual is a lifestyle choice or it is who you are. This is sure super muddled. Whether or not this guy's chosen.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I feel like you are who you are. I don't feel like it's a choice. I think that it can be a choice. I think the curiosity in people, just in general, this is like a very widespread brush here. I think people can be curious all they want. However, in this case, I felt like he was playing a part. I don't think he was like out of the womb knowing who he is gay, but I think he was in a situation where they also didn't allude to it, but if you do a little digging, he was already a reformed drug addict to begin with. He had a meth problem.
So
it's one of those things like when you are a drug addict, you're going to make compromising choices to adhere to a lifestyle. So I mean, the guy, the fact is that the drug use really doesn't come out till next episode and four and five.
I can't wait for drug
But it's
use.
Not even, I think, I feel like they glazed over it, to be honest. Really? There was so much more.
Well, I mean, did they really? I mean, it's very, very apparent through three episodes. I don't, like, just because they don't really
address, I mean, I know it's there, but they don't talk about the cat in the room.
The average American knows. To use a Nick Swartzen line, they are drinking meth through a fire hose. Because that was going to be my point. It's like clearly there are drugs involved here, right? People, you know, Joe Exotic is reaching out to people that are desperate and down on their luck and at their last wit's end.
But every time you can see he's got the twitches. He does his fucking nose twitch.
Who does?
Joe Exotic.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's got big twitches, and then as you go on, you'll start to see the other twitches, and that's something that's it's a you know, whether you call it meth mouth or whatever, that's signs
They're
of being a tweaker.
Telltale signs,
yeah,
for sure.
Telltale signs of being a tweaker.
It is really interesting though. Through three episodes, I keep saying that because that's how far I am. So, people who have seen the entire season may you'd be like, "Well, you're so ignorant." It does seem to me like. They're painting it in a way that makes it look like Joe Exotic has taken on this crusade against Carol Baskin that dwarfs and overshadows whatever it is that she's done to sort of hurt his reputation. That motherfucker got a copy of her diary, for God's sake.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened. I don't know how he got his hands on that. I feel like that's a court document. In the trial of, or the investigation rather, because it becomes public record at that point. That's the only thing I can think of, is that he got it through legal process.
Well, your answer suggests to me that they don't revisit that really.
The diary?
Yeah.
Yeah, they really don't go back to it.
Because there's a restraining order that never actually gets put in place. Oh, which reminds me. Remind me to talk about the lawyer with you.
Oh, God, turkey neck?
Oh. There's a restraining order that never ends up getting put in place because there's no hard evidence other than just an argument, right? But that stuff goes in the investigating detective does his best to try and make it look like they did everything they could. But clearly they turned up nothing of substance. So really what he's made himself look like incompetent. Really?
Yes.
Right? He tries to say that, like, well, our hands were tied because of this, this, and this. Eh, that's probably fair. But also, we're seeing all the evidence now. And I understand it's part of the system and blah, blah, blah. But if this diary is public record because of any sort of investigation, it would suggest that, like, when he says that nothing out of the ordinary exists, some of the shit she's saying is pretty extraordinary.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just about, like, he's perverted, and he's violent, and he's this, like, all the things. Which, I'm going to go back to it.
If this was, like, a cold case from 20 years ago, you could say, like, oh, well, you know, we can't. This was fucking 2 years ago.
I know. Can we go back to the day that Don Baskin met Carol Baskin?
Sure.
They mention like three different times in episode 3 that she was just walking the street at night. I am 1000% sure that she was a prostitute.
I could see that. And also, I mean, she was as a young woman, she was fairly attractive. I'll give her that.
Think about sort of the pieces that come together here, right? She has allegedly, and I don't have any reason to disbelieve her or believe her. I have equal reason to believe and disbelieve.
Right.
So I can only go on what she says, right? And then, like, if somebody comes forward and makes that kind of allegation, like, that's heavy. Raped at knife point? Like,
right.
You know, it's not like, you know, the Aziz Ansari situation where it's like, yeah, we were making out and then I told him to touch me and then it was, I didn't like it anymore. So it's not that. She said they raped me at knife point. That's very clear, right? So there's clear trauma there. And then also she comes from like a very right-wing Christian, conservative Christian family. She says that in the show.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably like a trauma sort of mental or sort of like cognitive reaction to what happened to her in terms of the trauma. And then also a rebellion factor from a conservative Christian standpoint. It's not a unique story. Really?
No, I think that's the basis for the movie Monster. There's a lot of one in four prostitutes have that story
right
in their holster.
And so the idea that he was just driving down the street and stopped
three different times, that was a weird part.
And she wouldn't.
First time said no, second time said no, third time, well, maybe. And then
right,
they
you
start
can put
talking.
A gun to my head.
Yeah.
Like
he had a fucking piece in his car and you can point a gun at me.
I promise you that he wanted an HJ while the gun was to his head. Like when she talks about perverted
who
stuff.
Who doesn't? Oh, wait, sorry. Is that a different podcast? Sorry. Hold on.
I'm just saying.
I'm going to dump
just
that. Saying.
I just can't. Like they mention it 3 times.
But that's a great call. I never put that together as far as her being a prostitute, but all this, you know, the magic eight ball, all signs point to yes. That would be the case.
Well, and you look at the way that, like, it's sort of implied and alleged that she's sort of gone after his money and how she's alienated the other family and everything else. Like, there is a very sort of manipulating way to get, you know, oh, you want me to do that to you? Let me get some more of that money, right?
Like, yeah.
You know, just, it just kind of fits. And if what she says is true about, you know, her, you know, horrible past, it's an awful thing. And it puts you in a place mentally where, you know, your decision making is affected by it. Your lifestyle's affected.
It also, it, you know, usually with that comes you can compartmentalize your emotions better. So the decision to have your husband fed to tigers and dismember their body is something that you can do without any emotion, because you can separate. You can separate because you were traumatized. People that have been traumatized can separate those things very easily.
Right.
Which is another, like, another factor into her. I think she needs a psych eval, like, now. 2-3 weeks ago. Yeah. She should have had a psych eval. It's fucking crazy.
Well, it's interesting the way the show kind of paints it is she gives the answer. The grinder exit is only, like, this big. How am I going to grind up
a whole human body?
And then, like, the next shot is them throwing, like, a whole yak.
Yeah.
Like, a whole side of a yak to the fucking tigers. Clearly, like, she didn't have to grind him. She could just freaking draw and quarter him.
Right.
And feed him to the...
But that's where the Clinton-esque answers come into play. She has this weird laughter and dismissiveness when she, like...
Dude.
It's so crazy. And it's like, totally. She's just like, what are you talking about? Of course. Totally. I could never have done that. Like, she answers the question in such a reverse answer. Of course I wouldn't do that.
To be able to feed him through a grinder that size, I would have had to have carved him up into 1/8-inch cubes.
And right.
I would have to do it. I would have to keep...
Own a knife that sharp to do this.
I'd have
things.
To keep the grinder in the cooler to make sure that I could feed it through cleanly and it didn't make a mess. It
doesn't overheat.
Because they didn't take DNA. I mean, I think they did take DNA off the grinder.
No, they tried to and they never got the order to.
Right, because... Oh, that's right. They didn't. And then the car, the van, right? It sat on the property for
3 days
before they did it. But, you know, anybody who uses a grinder knows you got to keep the product and the equipment cold. Otherwise, the meat starts to smear. It's harder to clean. You're not getting all the DNA off. So she's very specific about why she couldn't do it, right? She's like, don't you think I thought of that shit?
Yeah.
It's incredible. Incredible. I don't really know, like the phenomenon we're dealing with now with this is people like the TV show Hoarders, right? Because you're watching like a train wreck to some degree.
Right. You watch it because it makes you feel that much better about your life.
But there's a part of me that feels like specifically the way that Joe Exotic speaks and carries himself and acts. There's a part of me that feels like people are going to, certain parts of America are going to react, respond, and relate to this and latch onto it the way that they did with Duck Dynasty. Because they talk the same. They shoot guns. It's a big game. They have stupid beards. Wait, their haircuts are terrible.
There's going to be cat calls instead of duck calls?
Yeah. Yeah, but like, remember in like super white redneck America was like, Duck Dynasty. Best. And then you find out later that, like, oh, those dudes are all on yachts and friggin' Nautica shirts in the off season. They grow those beards out just for the for the show. Like, to me, it feels like, well, this one feels more authentic than those guys. I'm gonna latch on to this dude. Look at him shooting AR-15s into a river.
That is the most pointless shit ever when they just start fucking firing off rounds into the water.
And it is.
And I think almost every single episode, he shoots dynamite to some degree and blows some shit up.
It is sort of, and I don't know if this is like a masterstroke by the cinematographer or by the producer or whomever. It is very sort of staggering and eye-opening to see them shooting up a mannequin that they call Carol Baskin. That is like, right? Like,
Have you seen, I don't know if it's 3 or 4, I thought in episode 3 when he on his web show had a doll like stand there and he fucking point blank shoots her in the head.
No, that's coming. Yeah. That must be episode 4.
That's in episode 4 then. Yeah. Sorry. There's number 2 spoiler for you.
That's all good. It's all good. His like desire to latch on to her campaign against him is incredible. It is narcissism on a level that the average person can't relate to. You could turn on any presidential press conference and see it at the presidential level, but it's the same thing. It's like he's just decided that bitch down in Florida, Carol down in Florida wants this, trying to ruin me, trying to do this. No, man, that's what you're doing is weird.
and skeezy.
It's so, yeah, well, that's the thing is, like, you if you can't understand that, not everyone's going to agree with what you do, right? Let's look at you as an owner of a bar. Not everyone's going to agree with the idea of selling alcohol to people.
Right.
In consumptions of any level. People aren't always going to agree with that. It just happens to be within the limits of the law. He's operating within the limits of the law. And she's trying to push a bill. She's trying to push prohibition on him.
Yeah.
Right? He's a bar owner and that's it. You don't have to get upset. He's absolutely letting her ruin what he's got going for him. He gets so obsessed with it, but it's that narcissism that comes into play. You can't no matter what, that one person, right? That one squeaky wheel is gonna ruin everything you're doing. And you see there was interviews with people that would go to they would pay hundreds of dollars every day to go pet a fucking tiger.
Yeah, there was a guy, was he at Joe Exotic's place or was he at...
He was at Joe Exotic's.
Yeah, where
and
he
was... Third time that week he was there. At $600 a fucking copy.
Jesus.
I mean, I like that's...
Business owner to business owner, game recognized game.
Yeah, you've got something going.
Yeah,
good for you.
No kidding. We are jumping around all over the place, but when we're talking, I'm reminded of things.
Is this any different than our normal podcast?
No, definitely not. So Doc is sort of predatory in the way in which he sort of recruits his harem, to speak.
Yes.
When they show the Big Cat Rescue staff, has there ever been a more sordid and concentrated collection of cat ladies that you've ever seen in your life?
I think, and no disrespect to the people I know, but they're all substitute teachers. And every single one of them has a coffee mug that says, "I got a case of the Mondays."
There's at least four of them in a photo shoot at any time that have the weird foam visor with the telephone cord back.
Yes. Like the curly Q. They got it from a fun run 10 years ago. Just holding on to that for a special occasion. And they're going to color up. It's the weirdest... The weirdest military.
It is.
My God. And then she's even like, "I don't know these fucking people. They've been around for
four
years." I know.
She came out exactly. She goes, "Oh, I guess they're in around year four or five." I'm like, "Hey, I've seen you a lot. What is your name?" What? But again, it's the allure of this, like, this, you know, animal that people get so enamored with, right? The magnetism of something that's mythical in nature, right? These tigers and lions and everything else.
And they're disappearing from the face of the earth, so people feel, you know, and the stats that there are more tigers in captivity than there are in the wild.
Staggering.
Right? And all of those things, it makes sense why people are drawn to it, but some people, like, everyone has a thing they're about, a cause that they'll do anything for.
Substitute teacher. So good.
I'm sorry if I offended any substitute teachers, if you look around and you've got a cat hanging on your wall that says "hang in there," you might be one of these people that are coloring up.
Oh, my God. That is so good. Substitute teachers. Oh, my God.
That whole her army there, you know, the difference that she has, that Carol Baskin has over the other two between Doc and Joe, she clearly has a much better run facility. She has lieutenants and sergeants working for her. And fucking Joe just has, you know, fucking Slim Jim Bob off the street. You know, the difference is that she can afford and she pays her people.
She doesn't.
Well, no.
It's all volunteers.
No. All the volunteers. But someone has to manage all the volunteers, and those people are getting paid. I fucking promise you. She has people that are handling all that because she doesn't do that. She goes on a bike ride, and she's working on her marketing of the process, and she's going to the Congress, and she's doing all those things. Someone is managing, and it's not her fucking shithead husband. That guy is worthless.
That guy 150% wears his socks and shoes during intercourse. I promise you.
Oh, yeah. He wears loafers, the whole deal. Those things have a nice shine, and then he gets a nice shine.
Oh, my God. In my mind, you know, she's, in that regard, she's the worst. She's taking advantage of, like, Cat Lady's dedication to this.
Right.
She's going full, because she's not a non-profit, I don't think.
No, she's a for-profit. She just has the shelter of being, you're not a zoo or an amusement park.
Yeah, that's a real racket.
For sure.
I'm a non-profit, but I rely on the work of volunteers. That's
happening all over the fucking country, unfortunately.
Right.
People that have found that niche, that certain niche that allows them the ability to pull on the heartstrings of people, yet still turn a profit.
So what is worse? To level up in my business, you have to work 30 to 50 hours a week for no money, or you have to work 40 to 60 hours a week for some money, but you also have to bang me.
Well, the answer is easily the reward to bang you is in itself worthwhile. But yeah, that's the dock.
Because both of those things, track. Both of those things to me feels worse than, you know, you work 40 to 50 hours a week, you have a place to stay, and sure, you're eating some dumpster meat, but if everything's true, it's still cold. I don't know. I don't know much about how Walmart handles all that.
Oh, my God. You just wait. There's another good segment.
I can't wait.
It's episode six.
Wait.
Episode
I
six.
I want to watch it right now. Oh, my God.
But it's all levels of depravity. I mean, it's, you know, you're preying upon people to help your advancement of your, whether it's your mission, you know, in Carol Baskin's case, or for, you know, I feel whatever, for whatever reason, even though, you know, Joe Exotic had really poor conditions and it seemed like the animals were in decent shape, but he had the largest, for sure, the largest of all the three. But it just feels, it feels like she's preying upon volunteers. He's preying upon people that were hard on their luck, but he also has given them an opportunity to earn money too. He's not paying them. He's at least paying them something. He just happened to give them. They never discussed that. I would love to have hear what he was paying them.
I'd like to know what the like staff turnover type thing is between the three places, right? It doesn't seem in Doc's case that he's turning over a ton of staff, which is why they've really only had the ability to interview the one lady, right?
Right.
But like between Carol and Joe, I'd love to know what the turnover in the two staffs are. It certainly seems in Joe's situation that it's the same.
Well, the turnover you're going to get is the guy, like the people that are going to be drifters, and they're going to turn over, and they don't have a forwarding fucking address.
But they sure don't paint it that way through the first third of this series, right?
Just wait.
Oh, I can't wait. All right, good. All right, good. Oh God, this is it's the best. I don't know if it's just, hey, your restaurants are closing at 7, so you're home for TV time more than you've ever been in your life. So here's the thing. It's manna from heaven, or if it's just so good that I'm hooked, or I don't know what the deal is, but I'm not, I mean, you know, I'm not crazy TV guy.
No,
I can't
no,
get
no.
enough of this.
And quite honestly, like I don't venture out on shows and documentaries as much as I want to. I fall into the same routine. And for me, this has been great to break that routine up. And this has been, you know, of all the shutdown and stuff, I talk to the neighbors that we have had contact with. We talk a lot about all of the good things that are hopefully going to come out of this, or out of the, you know, the back end of this, you know, shelter in place. But one of those things, like stuff like this just proves again that you can have great content. You don't need a stand-up comedian like Dave Chappelle or Eddie Murphy whenever that special comes out. But they've also fast-tracked Ozark. They've fast-tracked a bunch of things. I think the part that this blows me away, this is a complete different tangent than anything we've talked about, how dynamic and impressive it's been to see major corporations like McDonald's, Burger King, UPS, anyone and everyone that has a fucking ear, how fast they shot a commercial talking about no contact and talking about staying at home. I mean, so much so that when the first shelter-in-place order came in, Comcast was already talking about the ease of binge-watching. It was subliminal advertising about binge-watching shows. They just kind of reworded it to make it sound like it was something for the family to do.
If you're not listening for politics, brace yourselves. That is not nimble work. Those are major corporations seeing through the 6 weeks that this administration wasted.
Yes.
Trying to pass it off as like a Democratic hoax. And I am unregistered as far as party. I have voted Republican and Democrat at times.
I can't believe how fast they're able to take like Burger King as the one that Burger King and Taco Bell both shot pretty impressive, like kind of quote unquote heartfelt commercials about having your best interest in mind, about separation.
They had a month lead time because they had people that were like, because they're international companies, right?
Right.
So those companies are international.
They see everything happening in Japan and Italy and they start coming over.
Well, these guys, the United States isn't doing anything about it yet, but it's coming. So let's shoot this. And then a month, like we're going to have, you know, we can see this or whatever. Like we could see it's a month in advance. It's even if we had waited like another month, like they just shoot that stuff and have it ready to go. You know, so I guess in a way I see what you're saying about them being nimble, but also like those are companies that have, I bet you those same commercials were shot in Italian.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know what I mean? So I don't know. You're right.
It's just, I appreciate what they're doing. It's crazy that they were able, even I think a month is giving them too much credit. I think they're able to get this done in 2 weeks, most of these places. And they're able to shoot these commercials and get this shit done and just guerrilla those commercials out. And same reason why, editing and all of these, whether it's Netflix or any other major show is coming out. It's crazy the content they're providing. But also, like to my original point, it's great to see how Netflix has proven to be a disruptor in the major market conglomeracy of like Comcast and Viacom and things like that. It's great. I think it's great. And it's one of those things like if anything can be taken away, you don't necessarily need to tune in. Because you know what hasn't been happening is Saturday Night Live and Jimmy Kimmel and all those things. Yeah. Like, and even WWE still held a WrestleMania event with no crowd.
Very weird.
So weird.
I read, it was an article, I think, I can't remember if it was in Variety or where it was, but basically the article was interviewing 30 experts in 30 fields. And it was, you know, theology and sociology and finance and, you know, and culinary and everything. And it was, this is the type of thing that changes the way the world views and acts on everything, right? So as restaurants, we're dealing with it right now. We're all to go. One of my restaurants is built to handle it at high volume, and one of them isn't. The one that isn't built to handle to go at high volume is the one that's the busiest. And so we're having to reevaluate the way we do it to, you know, be able to accommodate. As citizens of the globe, we have to reevaluate how we exist in this little rat maze, right? And so, do you need Jimmy Kimmel's show on Saturday?
No.
Saturday Night Live's best things are things that they put on YouTube that's digital shorts that didn't even make the show.
That once the show is not worth watching because if it's something funny, it'll be out literally hours later.
Yeah, and so...
And that's what I defer to.
So the only thing that really won't change is sports because people are dying for Sunday football and Saturday afternoon college basketball and, you know, baseball on the radio and all these things. People are dying for that stuff. But the way we operate with entertainment and content in general, podcasts notwithstanding, right? Like, the way we operate is changing drastically because... It's all Netflix now. It's all Hulu now. It's all, like, there's no live TV being watched. Who cares?
Yeah,
people are watching the news more than they've ever watched it, but they're watching 14 minutes of it, and then the news cycle resets itself, and it's the same information, so now you're on to, you know, Tiger King or whatever right. the hell else.
So. It just again, it proves that the adaptation of what we consume is ever evolving, and it's to me, it's amazing.
It's nice to know that, to your point, it's nice to know that you can evolve on the fly. Everything yeah. doesn't have to be partisan and dug in and this is the way we do it. Fuck everything else. Like, it doesn't have to be like that, people. Relax. You know what it does have to be like? Social media interactions. We got to do that.
Ooh.
It's the only way we can talk to each other.
Way to go.
Keep in touch. Make sure you check us out next week. We're going to be talking about...
We're going to do a follow-up to this one.
What hopefully is... You know, me having finished up the season, regardless of whether or not my wife falls asleep in the middle of episode 3, it's, you know what? It's on her. She got to figure it out.
Exactly.
I'm watching it. Check us out on all the socials, guys. It's on Facebook. It's on Instagram. It's on Twitter. At Sports Meets Beer. Meets like the protein, M-E-A-T-S. Sports Meets Beer. Or you can email the show at sportsmeetsbeer@gmail.com. As they say in English, my American language has gotten gooder and gooder as we have been quarantined from
drinking more and more.
Yeah, quarantined from people. I'm Brad Barmore. That has been Perry. It has been great to get on the mics with y'all.
Yeah.
I can't wait to do this again next week.
Follow up next week. And then look also for some, I'm trying to dabble in some hard-hitting coverage with some, I want to talk to some local bartenders.
Oh, shit.
I have some questions I want to ask. Some hard, like, just like 10 questions. About what's going on right now and about the future,
what they think.
Because there's some iconic bartenders in this town, and I want to hit them all up and just be like, hey, so if you're a bartender and you want to talk about stuff, whether you own a business or not, please hit us up.
Yeah.
sportsmeetsbeer@gmail.com. Otherwise, check out our previous episodes. Last one we dropped was the other day with Brian Wheatley. Great episode. A lot of baseball talk. Brian does a great job filling in. In fact, from this point forward, I think Brian's going to be the baseball guy. Any episode that has
I think
to do
he might
baseball.
Be joining the Bay Area Bias Media Network.
I told him he needs to. He's got the voice for it.
Yeah,
he's
in.
To go.
I think he's in. He's going to be talking with his heterosexual life mate, who's a Dodger fan. He's a Yankee fan. I think the podcast might be called Long Distance Relationship. I think that's what they're going to be doing.
Oh, so, Jesus. I would call it losers.
Yeah, well, losers?
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, you know what? Forget it. It's fine. Look at it this way. If you're a Dodger fan, you won't have to watch them choke in October this year. You get to watch them choke in December. Isn't that the best? Sports Beats Beer, everybody. We'll see you later.